Greetings. Welcome back to the New Adventures of the Mountain Pass podcast. This is your host, as always, TJ Martinell, coming to you from my war room in my Fortress Americana in the heart of Cascadia. The date is February 27th, 2024. And this episode is the Millennial Dilemma episode. As I talked about in the last podcast, one of the reasons I stopped podcasting is because I'd either run out of things to say or that I needed to sit down and actually think about what I wanted to say. So much of the last year has been spent mulling over certain ideas, concepts, thoughts. I spent, as some people could tell you, I spent a lot of time just sitting, thinking things over. And one of the reasons I do thinking, because if somebody were to ask me, this is another reason why I'm doing the podcast, is because I don't have these conversations with people. People really don't ask. And the reason I do thinking is because I then can anticipate what to expect. And we're going to get into the expectation thing because expectations are very important. One of the questions, and this is the question of the podcast, now we're going to get to the end, in classic film noir fashion, what is going to happen to millennials, which is my generation? Like, what is the millennial generation going to look like in 10 years? What is it going to look like in 15 years? And to answer that question, I'm starting to sound like Vladimir Putin when he was being interviewed by Tucker Carlson. You know, why did you decide to invade Ukraine? Well, we're first going to have to go through the first 800 years of Russia's history. Which is basically what it's like talking to an engineer. You know, well, should I use this or this on this project? Well, you know, that was first invented, and it's like 2 hours later. And that's why you should not maybe do that. Oh, so I should do this one? No, you should do the other one. Okay, why didn't you just say so? You could have saved me 2 hours and, you know, my blood pressure going. Anyways, it's important because it's like a syllogism. I'm guiding you people. I'm your guide for this evening's festivities. This is actually late at night, so I want to just get this done with. One of the things I'm really not emphasizing in my own personal life is getting things done when they need to get done and not postponing them. To understand my answer, if someone were asking me, what do you think is going to happen with millennials? And believe me, by the time I'm done and I'm telling you what I think is going to happen, you're going to suddenly understand what I'm talking about. You're going to think, wow, that's crazy. How did you come to that conclusion? And then I explain to you how I came to that conclusion. To understand the question, you have to understand millennials, and you need to understand their history as a generation. And the first difference, say, because there's a big discussion about what makes a millennial, what makes a Gen Xer, what makes a Zoomer, whatever. And there's debates over the whole, I think the biggest debate for me is when they try to classify certain millennials at certain, what I believe, Zoomers to be millennials. If you grew up after a certain part, if you were born after a certain part of the 90s, you are not a millennial. There's the technological immigrants like myself, and then there's the technological natives, people who are born with technology that is the mainstay of our culture. And I shouldn't have to explain. Oh, by the way, we're going to pause for a second. I am not going to be explaining anything that I'm saying here. I'm not going to be trying to contextualize or rebut hypothetical arguments to the contrary. I'm just going to lay it out and hope that the person listening to this is smart enough to understand what it is I'm talking about. The reason why it's important to differentiate the millennials from Gen Xers is how they were raised and by whom. This is my personal view on generational stuff. If you look at the boomers, what counts as a boomer is somebody born from 1946 to 1964. That is a huge time period. And in my opinion, it's not accurate. I think that there was a certain there. If you're going to do that, you got to break it down into two waves. There was the first wave of baby boomers, and there was a second wave of baby boomers. The first wave of baby boomers raised the Gen Xers. The second wave of baby boomers raised the millennials. And of course, it's like with anything, there's going to be, you know, edges where somebody's kind of crossing the chasm between the two. But more or less, we're dividing them into two camps. The defining difference between, and we're talking about parenting for right now. We'll get into the time period eras in a second. This is going to be a long podcast. This is going to be on par with Vladimir Putin's interview with Tucker Carlson. We're setting expectations for you appropriately. The reason why this matters is the way that they parented their children. The first wave of baby boomers really raised Gen Xers as latchkey kids, where they were completely unsupervised. This did not occur in my generation, but it occurred in theirs. They had TV stations concluding their broadcast with, "It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?" This was an actual thing that went on back in the day when the first wave of baby boomers were raising their children. And believe me, when I talk to a lot of Gen Xers, that is literally how it was. Their parents would hand them the keys to the car, or they would just not care what they were doing. They just had to be reminded that they had children. That means that the Gen Xers were able to do whatever they wanted. They had a sense of freedom to go do the stuff that they wanted to do. And they were allowed to, I'd say, explore themselves where they were in control of the spaces that they occupied, or they were in control of their own socializing. I think that that's the big key thing. With second wave boomers, you had this weird shift towards where the millennials were more controlled, but it was also more permissive. And that's a weird thing to say, and it's very difficult to explain for somebody who didn't grow up in that era. But they had freedom, but it was a controlled sense of freedom. But I think the key point is when millennials were young, there was a sense of, I don't want to say hands off or permissiveness, but it was just a little bit more controlled. Now we'll get into it, but it changed. It changed as millennials got older. Because a level of control over a child, and when I say control, like where it seems healthy at 5, 6, 7 is one thing, but when you're exercising that same control when they're 17, 18, 19, 20, that's a different problem. Now we're going to shift over from the parenting stuff over to the eras. I'm not going to go into Gen Xers. I'm not going to go into baby boomers. This is not a podcast. I know this is going to come as a shock. It's going to shock. There's something else to talk about. We're going to talk about the millennials. I think the most important point to understand is the pivotal years we were growing up. Which were between 1991 and 2001. And the reason those years matter is because 1991 was when the Soviet Union basically fell apart and the Cold War ended. And 2001 is when September 11th happened and the War on Terror began, and our nation has been at war pretty much ever since. So for a 10-year period, you had Pax Americana. You had no enemies. You had no threats. You had no existential crises. I mean, global warming wasn't really even a thing. I mean, you could watch Captain Planet, but, worry about the rainforests in South America. But nobody really was... We were not making massive changes to our infrastructure, our economy, our tax code. We were not lowering the standard of living and raising the costs of living in order to save the rainforest. There was a sense of just calm and normalcy where you went to school, and in comparison, we weren't worried about a nuclear bomb going off. We weren't worried about terrorists. We weren't worried about... There wasn't anything to worry about. There wasn't any really bad economy. The worst thing that was going on, the biggest controversy in our country's national scene, was the president hooking up with his unattractive intern. I mean, that was pretty much, that is a scandal that almost got a president removed from office. In contrast, look at the stuff that's just considered normal today in our congressional delegate, whatever you want to call them, that just what passes for Congress today and the stuff that you can get away with. And then you get to 2001 and the war, September 11th happens and the war on terror begins. And this is a defining feature of the millennials. Everything for us since 9/11 has gotten worse. An example of that is where the nation's basically been at each other's throats since the Iraq War. So basically 2003. Now, leading up to it was 2002. So we're talking 22 years of intense national division that first started over that war, but then it just turned into everything else. And there's no way you can possibly imagine things turning around and go... I don't know what it's like to grow up in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and all that kind of stuff. I do know that if you grew up during the Vietnam era, things kind of calmed down, and I get that there was controversies in the 70s, but things politically calmed down. And I understand that things possibly have calmed down a little bit in some ways, but we've basically, especially since... frankly, Donald Trump announced his presidency and became president. We have been in a state of hysteria, of just absolute end of the world. Every conversation is the last conversation unless we do something right now. It's a perpetual fight or flight mode, a perpetual, we're all going to die unless something changes right now. This 10 out of 10 on the urgency level with everything that we talk about. That just didn't go. And if you want to know what I mean, go watch anything that really took place. This is why I keep a lot of old VHSs, is because I can go back and tape stuff on TV. I can go back and watch movies that also include commercials and news programs where there was a sense of just calm. And the newscasters were controlled and people weren't unhinged and losing their minds on national television. There was a sense of decorum and you had to maintain your composure. All these things have just been thrown out the door. And you get this sense of there's just a total lack of stability. There's nothing holding things together the way that there seemed to be back in the day when we millennials were youngins. And you can tell that nothing has gotten better since, 2011, or is it 2011? 2000, that'd be different. 2001 is the way that millennials cling to their childhood through nostalgia in a way that boomers and especially Gen Xers do not. Boomers celebrated and celebrate their childhoods. Millennials cherish it as if it's a home that burned to the ground. It's only that's the difference. It's like somebody who, is looking at a picture of their old home that they left years ago, and then somebody's looking at a home that they used to live in that was burned to the ground. There was this, I don't know if it was a tweet or an Instagram post or whatever it was, but there was this social media post that said more or less, it's 1998, your friends are all coming over to play GoldenEye, you all have Rumble Packs, cheese pizza is on its way, you don't know it, but that's as good as life is ever going to get. That really kind of summarizes the millennial experience. And for someone who thinks that that's pathetic or sad, I would say you're clearly not a millennial. We laugh because it's funny. It's like what Al Capone said. We laugh because it's funny, but we laugh because it's true. There is a very unpleasant truth for millennials in that post, which is why it was popular, which is why people share it. You don't see boomers saying that. You don't see boomers posting, it's 1968, and yeah, I get the Vietnam War was going on and all that, but it's like, it's 1968, whatever, and life is that. No boomer's gonna say that certain periods of time was as good as life was ever gonna get. I don't even think that Gen Xers have that kind of mindset or mentality. And I think that that's also partly due. This isn't to say that that they don't aren't nostalgic, especially the Gen Xers and guys who grew up in the 80s. It's that they look at their childhoods from a different perspective and through a separate lens, and that lens is based off of expectations. And for millennials, one of the problems is that the world we were raised in does not exist. But more importantly, the future we expected to have happen didn't happen. Now, I talked about this in the last podcast. People say, well, what did you expect was going to happen? And this is a difficult question to answer because you're required to get into specifics. Here's really what I thought. I thought technology was going to get better. But for the best, meaning it was going to make our lives better and it wasn't going to cause problems. I didn't think that it's not a question. Actually, this is it. It's not what I thought was going to happen. It's what I thought wouldn't happen, or things that I didn't think was going to happen. I think that that's where we actually need to break it down. It's not a question of what we thought was going to happen. It's that things happen that we thought weren't going to happen. But more importantly, things happen and are happening and happened that we thought were not possible. Like, look at what's happening now and try just explaining, regardless of your feelings on the current the former president. Imagine going back to 1998 and explaining to someone that Donald Trump has been elected president of the United States. He did not get reelected for his second term, regardless of your feelings on the outcome of the election. It doesn't matter. He is not in the Oval Office right now. And he is currently being prosecuted and he got impeached twice. No, that's just one of many things that is just so foreign. Oh, and he's considered a far right extremist by many people. Like, try explaining to someone in 1998 that Donald Trump would someday day be viewed as a far right extremist president. Do you understand what I'm saying? That you have to compare what people thought at the time compared to what's going on now, because that is what they thought was go that's it's not a question of what they thought was going to happen. It's this is not this was not in their bingo card. You know, there was the car bingo that you used to play back in the day when you didn't have electronic gadgets and toys and you had to actually play manual games. That was not in the car bingo card. That's just what, how many other things do we need to go through that we would say this is not only happening, it's happened, and a person in 1998 can't even fathom it? And part of it was the trajectory of history at that moment. The Cold War was over. We didn't have any enemies around the country. Things were pretty calm in the country domestically. George Bush had just won one of the closest races in American history, and it was a very contentious one, but people kind of moved on. I didn't know this at the time, but we were in the process of paying off our national debt. We could have theoretically paid off our national debt. We could have, see, this is kind of what I'm saying is there was a context and a situation. The national debt thing is just what, this is back when our country was spending so much less than it is now that it was having a surplus. And you might think, what does that have to do with millennial experience? Guys, it's a reflection of the state of affairs. Look at what our country's like domestically, then look at our fiscal policy. Are they not both as screwed up? I'm not saying it's always connected and that correlation equals causation. I'm saying within the context of 1998, you could be having a discussion with someone about how to pay off the national debt within a few years. That was a discussion that you could have. Discussing how to pay off the national debt now at $34 trillion in debt, what exactly are you going to say? It's like a guy wanting to play football at age 48 as opposed to age 18. You are having a completely different conversation. Or at least the conversation is in the realm of possibility when you're 18. When you're 48, you're not playing, at least in the professional leagues. That's just, it just ain't gonna happen. We didn't expect that there was going to be a whole bunch of wars. And here's the other thing that's worth comparing. The boomers, when they had their Vietnam, most people do not remember the people who fought, when I say fought, who instigated the war. Some people who are more historically inclined. The average person does not remember who waged the Vietnam War. You know what they remember? They remember the music and culture that was created in a response to that war. What exactly did, because the boomers were actually in control of the culture after a certain period of time. And I can tell you this from personal experience because I've spoken to and interacted with several famous baby boomers. One was in a very famous 1970s rock band, and I heard him talk last year. And he was reflecting on what life was like, you know, when he was young. And it was very much the sense of they were in control and shaping the narrative for the future of the country, if not the world. I mean, this is where if you're going to pick on boomers, yeah, I would turn to the Greatest Generation and say, what's going on here? But that's for a separate podcast. Just saying, this is an example where millennials have not, this is going to a different topic. Millennials never had an opportunity to express themselves through entertainment within the context of it being a generational thing. But going back to what I thought was going to happen, It goes back to what I didn't think was going to happen. I didn't think my hometown of Bellevue, Washington would go from being this middle-class town where you could buy a home for $300,000 back in, mid-2000s or after the housing bubble collapsed. Now you cannot buy a home for less than $1 million. It's the most expensive real estate in the country. Now, I understand that not everybody's dealt with that as a millennial, but this is an example of where things happened that I did not expect to happen, and it really changes what you expect. You expect things, you expect, just you intuitively expect something reasonable, like I expect the housing to remain affordable in my hometown. A bedroom community for a metropolitan city a couple miles away. You don't expect, go back to somebody who lived in Bellevue in the 2000s and say, hey, that house you're living in right now that you bought for $195,000, that's going to be worth $1.8 million one day. They're not going to know how to process what you just told them. They're not going to, no one would believe you. I mean, even adjusted for inflation, that is an insane amount of money. And we're not talking mansions here, guys. We're talking about 2,000 square foot homes. And even if you have think, back in the day, if you had things go bad in like politically or maybe the economy was down, you still had culture, you had sports, you had TV, you had music, you had you had films. You had social places to go to. there were places to go. It was a degrade from what had been before that, perhaps, but there was still stuff. Look at, as I talked about in the last podcast, what exactly is there left? And it goes back to what I'm talking about, where Gen Xers were allowed their moment in the culture. And if you're wondering, just look at the late 90s and early 2000s. That was all music that was done by Gen Xers. The films were about Gen Xers. They weren't produced by Gen Xers, but they were films about and centered around, of course, the train has to come by, around Gen Xers. We're just gonna let the train have its day. Smoke him if you got him. Let's see if it's gonna hoot its whistle. All right, we're gonna get into the more important part of like what's going on with this whole thing. Millennials, by the time we got to be of age as young adults, that is when all these institutions that we grew up in and grew up with, and when you say institution, I mean just things that are part and parcel of life, like societal rules and norms. I'll give an example, dating. There used to be rules. I know because when I was dating when I was younger, there was very clear rules and the rules were obeyed. Not always, but it was the rule proves the except, or sorry, the exception proves the rule. And people just started violating the rules. I'm not talking about just dating, but just I don't have to explain. Things just started falling apart, and people who were supposed to maintain these institutions let them die. They didn't hand them off to someone else to have them like carry it on. This is actually what I was thinking about. I feel like the boomer, the second wave boomers in many ways raised their children with this weird kind of sense of there is going to be nothing after they die. So the idea of their children getting married and having their own children didn't occur to them as they were raising their kids. I think that this is a theory, but it explains a lot. Like, why are there so many single millennials? I think that they were raised with this weird, and I'm not talking about something that was overt. I'm talking about something that's deeply subconsciously, it's a deep subconscious belief internalized but conveyed through how they were raised. They were raised with this idea that there was going to be no generations after them. And they can't control what happens in another family. They can't control what happens with their own children. So, in what way did they encourage them to get married? And when I say encouraged, I don't mean where they sat down with Timmy and said, "Hey, Timmy, I just want to encourage you to get married." That's not how it works. It's where everything that they're just everything about how they communicate with you is with this implicit understanding that is going to lead to a marriage in a realistic fashion. Right? If all you ever tell your daughter is to be successful and to be, successful in the business world and be, able to take care of yourself and not have to rely on anybody else, what you are communicating is no marriage, and if kids don't happen, it's not a priority because we're not rec nothing we say accounts for that. And also, here's the other thing about that is that people get angry when their expectations aren't met. How many baby boomers, second wave baby boomers, are legitimately outraged that they are not being given grandchildren? That's an honest question. That's a question for you, dear listeners, to think about is how many boomers have you seen express anger at the idea that they do not have grandchildren because their daughter comes back home on holidays with a fur baby? I am willing to have somebody prove me wrong or explain how I'm wrong, but I have a feeling that there was this sort of idea that no, our kids are going to be our kids are going to be the end of the line. Like, they're going to be the end of the family tree. Because what I see is a lot of families with children who have no children, and the weird sort of ways that they rationalize that situation means it doesn't bother them, or that this is actually something that they, this is an outcome that they desired. Not to be overly conspiratorial, but I look at how people respond to stuff. But it doesn't change the fact that you have a ton of millennials who are single, childless, unmarried, and are probably never going to get married. And the moment of truth is approaching. I mean, if you're born in 87, you're going to be 37 this year. So you're a middle ground millennial. This is going to be a problem, not just for the men, not this is going to be a problem for the women. Just at this point, it is you're having a geriatric pregnancy. For the men, it's a problem because what, how are you, what are you going to do? I mean, there's different options there. I don't see them as necessarily realistic. I mean, you can try dating younger girls and, you can just try. If that's what you want to do, you and not trying to discourage you, just yeah, we'll just leave it at that. And you can try dating a girl your own age that has its own issues where you have two people who've been single for so long and independent for so long, they have a lot of habits that would have to be either compatible with each other or they would have to break, which they're not going to because they don't have to. Another thing that's worth noting is I think that this is really happening with millennials is they really don't have a lot of close friends anymore. I know a lot of boomers where they have had the same friends for 50 years. Just doesn't matter what's, I don't blame everything. I blame a combination of societal changes, generational raising, and technology for why millennials don't have close friends. I think part of it was they were not, unlike Gen Xers, they were not allowed to form friend circles apart from their parental supervision. I think that that's part of it. I'm not blaming everything on the boomers. I'm not blaming everything on one group of people. I'm just saying that I think that that's part of it is they, I frankly, I think that there's a lot going on there, but I think that that's part of it. I think the other thing is a lot of millennials were, it goes back to what I was saying. They had freedom that was controlled but permissive. It's difficult to describe, but a lot of them were just used to doing and getting their way in a lot of cases. They were used to having being able to engage in behavior, I guess is the best way to put it. They weren't unsupervised. They were allowed to express themselves in ways that does not do well for friendships and relationships. So what is this all adding up to? Well, you have an entire generation, a huge chunk of a generation that's single, childless, never going to be married. They are in a sense of nostalgic mourning for what has been lost, that is no longer in regular culture. Many of them can't afford a home. I'm a millennial who happens to own his own home. Which proves I can understand. I am capable of understanding that if it's just because it's not my problem doesn't mean it's not a problem. This is actually a problem for a lot of people to wrap their heads around. Just because it's not a problem for you doesn't mean it's not a problem for other people and doesn't mean it's a problem for the majority of people. This is something I've encountered and I've dealt with enough in my lifetime. There are people who legitimately cannot understand how a problem that isn't theirs can be others. That how a problem can exist when it doesn't exist for them. They legitimately cannot wrap their heads around it. So what is this all leading to when, because millennials are still relatively young. They're not old, they're not young, and they're not middle-aged yet, but we're getting there. What is that going to look like in a couple of years? And now we get to the point of my podcast where I say where I see this headed. And this is a theory, this is a gut instinct. That is all I'm going to say on this. You could very well have millennials living communally in homes or multi-family housing of some kind. I'm not going to go into a description of what it looks like. Because that's not the point. Point is, you're going to have people living in housing, a bunch of single people living in the same house together, acting like family or relatives who are millennials and who have kind of gone back to a childlike state. Where you are going to have them effectively having the house decorated or furnished with stuff from their childhood era. And they're going to basically act like they are still in school. They're not going to go to school, but they are going to act like they are still in school and they are living in a house with a bunch of family members or friends or something like that. So they're going to have, you have a bunch of people living together in the same house, and they're going to have Mario Kart night and Mario Party night, and they're gonna have game some whatever nostalgic trip that you can get, they will go on, and that will be part of their social activities together as a group of people. But it will be done in a very quasi kind of childish manner. And for the more extreme versions, you could very well have people in their 40s wearing onesie pajamas, waking up on a Saturday morning, going downstairs, eating their bowl of cereal, and then watching cartoons from DVDs or live streaming. I think you're probably starting to understand now why I had to go into all this background about what is going on. It's a generation that has, I don't want to use the word arrested development, but there is a it goes back to what I'm saying about millennials clinging to their childhood and their past because they don't have anything to put their foot into in the present. And for them, this is going to sound weird for some people, but that kind of stuff was as good as life got for them. And this is why it's going to be easy for them to slip back into this mode. Because when you don't have kids and you're not married and you don't have enough money to own your own house and you're trying to, get roommates, why would you not want to go live with a bunch of millennials? I mean, you could theoretically have a house that is rented out or sells rooms or whatever it is. Basically, a senior living center equivalent for millennials, where it's not the exact same design. It's not designed like a senior living center because these people are fully capable of taking care of themselves. They did, they also that's not what the design and aesthetics are for. The millennial living centers are going to want to resemble their childhoods, and the purpose of it is for them to gather around other people with whom they can bond over a shared childhood experiences and basically avoid dealing with the unpleasant reality that they are going to spend this is a way to avoid what could be called the sterility, a life devoid of, because if you live as a if you live as a bachelor in a bachelor pad and you don't have any pets or whatever, you don't have anybody who needs you. If you're living in one of these millennial living centers, you have people that you have as close. Basically, the show Friends is probably another way to describe it. Think of it, that was Gen Xers, but think of like the millennial version of Friends, except they're in their late 40s. And they're not progressing towards anything beyond that. That's where they're basically going to spend the rest of their life. And that is going to be their way of base of creating some form of emotional stability for themselves. Because I can also say that this is not a point fingers at anybody, but this is also in response to the fact that many families have been completely atomized. They're in different parts of the country. They don't really talk to each other. They don't have any relationships. And yet, this is a profoundly unnatural thing to have going on. I know that some people, oh, my GDP got generated. Well, that's great, but that's not how humans were meant to live. We were meant to live close to extended family, have people help each other out, and not have to pay them to do so. Right? You just understand that this is family. We look out for each other. It's a reciprocal relationship. It's not a freaking transaction, but that's not the world we live in. We're living in America, and America's not a country, it's just a business. That's a quote from a movie that you need to go see. So that's a part of the thing is like we're reaching kind of this pinnacle of unnaturalness in modern America where people are going to try to parcel together a form of living that is tolerable and will not drive people insane. So for all the mockery that we would likely see of a situation like this, where you have millennials in their late 40s in onesies eating Rice Krispie Treat cereal on a Saturday morning watching cartoons, that is going to seem very weird. Which is why I spent the last 30 something minutes walking you through what's going on here. They are going to go back to a time when things for them were better. This goes, I'm going to emphasize once more. This is a gut instinct as to what is likely to occur with a section of millennials as a generation. So on that note, I hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast. You can go, you find this at tjmartinell.com. There is no other place to find it. I mean, I post it on Twitter, but you got to click through the link to download this stuff. So, I'll just end it on this note. If you like fiction, you can always go to amazon.com, or there's links to my books on the website. You're smart. You'll figure it out. So thanks for listening to the Mountain Pass podcast. This is your host, TJ Martinell, coming to you from my war room in my Fortress Americana in the heart of Cascadia. Signing off.